Hello, Buddhas, and welcome to another reading of The New Human Revolution, Volume 1. We will read pages 117 to 137 and complete the chapter of A New World. So, let's begin. After he finished discussing the new organizational arrangements, Shinichi chatted with those who were there. It was then that he heard the rhythmic sound of Gongyo emanating from the main meeting room. Shinichi went to have a look. Two or three members were doing Gongyo, led by an American man of around 30. It was a truly sonorous Gongyo. The American's enunciation of the liturgy was extremely clear. Shinichi returned to the other room. A little while later, he invited the man who had led Gongyo, along with his wife, to join him for a chat. "What is your name?" asked Shinichi. Smiling, the man shook his head, indicating that he didn't understand. His wife answered on his behalf. "I'm sorry, my husband doesn't speak Japanese. His name is George Oliver, and I'm Yasuko, his wife." George Oliver had taken faith in Japan 6 years earlier and had returned to the United States with his wife 3 years ago. In Japan, he had been taken under the wing of Joji Kanda, the chief of Tokyo's Nakano chapter and a teacher of English literature at a university. With Kanda's guidance and support, George participated in Soka Gakkai activities and steadily exerted himself in faith. He and his wife continued their practice after returning to America and had succeeded in leading a number of others to embrace the Daishonin's Buddhism. "Where have you come from today?" asked Shinichi. "From Reno, Nevada." "Thank you for coming such a long way. How many hours did it take you to get here?"
5 hours by car."
"Is that so? It must have been a strenuous trip. Please be sure to leave right after the discussion meeting so that you don't get back too late." Yasuko translated these words for her husband.
"Domo arigato gozaimasu."
"Thank you very much," responded George in Japanese. He then continued in English, with Nagayasu Masaki interpreting for him. "It is a great honor to welcome you to America, President Yamamoto. When my wife and I were living in Japan, we were in a dilemma over whether to stay in Japan or go back to the United States. At that time, we had a chance to receive guidance from President Toda. He told us, Buddhism must be propagated widely throughout the world. Therefore, I want you to go back to America and do your best." When I heard this, I keenly sensed the depth of his desire to achieve worldwide Kosen Rifu. Now, here you are in America, only 5 months after your inauguration. This clearly shows that you are putting into practice President Oda's spirit to spread the Daishonin's Buddhism throughout the world. George Oliver's words riveted the attention of the leaders accompanying Shinichi. "After President Oda's death," Oliver continued, "I worried about what would become of the Soka Gakkai. But meeting President Yamamoto like this, I can sense that the Soka Gakkai has made a fresh start with its youthful president towards a limitless future. I also deeply appreciate your concern about our journey back home. Meeting you today, President Yamamoto, will remain a precious memory for the rest of my life." Hearing Oliver's words, Shinichi's companions exchanged looks of surprise. Somewhere in their hearts, they had felt that perhaps only a Japanese could comprehend and appreciate faith in the Daishonin's Buddhism and the Soka Gakkai spirit. But seeing this American member firsthand, they were struck by how wrong their thinking had been. The principle of mutual possession of the 10 worlds is universal to all human beings. Therefore, faith in the Daishonin's Buddhism is open to all people, transcending ethnic or national differences. As Shinichi Yamamoto listened to George Oliver speak, he considered whether he should establish a district in Nevada as well, and appoint the Olivers as the district chief and women's division district chief. He had already learned that there were almost no other members in the region of Nevada. Certainly, it would be a first to appoint an American of non-Japanese descent to the position of district chief. But without planting a seed, no fresh new shoots would emerge. Unless non-Japanese leaders eventually appeared in each country, the full-fledged development of Kosen Rufu could not be realized. Moreover, an organization is determined by its leaders. If the central figure resolves to stand up alone, then everything will develop from there. Shinichi's mind moved with lightning swiftness. In a moment, he announced, "I will establish a district in Nevada too." The decision was clearly beyond the comprehension of his companions. This was because of the disparity in determination, or ichinin, between them and Shinichi. Having made worldwide Kosen Rufu his life's mission, Shinichi was now forging ahead with single-minded purpose to realize that goal. None of his decisions or responses was made on a mere impulse or whim. Even split-second decisions contained his concentrated thought for Kosen Rufu that came from exerting infinitely painstaking effort in each moment of life. The entire world was beating vibrantly within Shinichi's heart. As the time for the discussion meeting approached, Yukiko Gilmore wondered anxiously how many members would turn up. In preparation for Shinichi's visit to San Francisco, the Overseas Affairs section of the Soka Gakkai headquarters had sent her a list with the names of some 20 members living in and around the San Francisco area. She had either gone to visit them at their homes or contacted them by letter, but she didn't think that many of them would come to the meeting. By the time the discussion meeting was about to begin, however, the room was packed with about 30 people. Not surprisingly, the majority were Japanese women now living in America. All were amazed to see how many fellow members had gathered. Members in Japan had also contacted those they knew who had gone to live in the San Francisco area, informing them of the planned discussion meeting with President Yamamoto. Aileen whispered to Yukiko Gilmore, "Wow, there are so many people. Talk about bodhisattvas of the earth. I wonder if they don't actually pop up out of the ground after all." "Don't talk such nonsense," rejoined Yukiko. "It was bad enough when you proudly told President Yamamoto yesterday that you practice faith like fire. People will think I'm always teaching you strange things." Shinichi happened to overhear this frank yet innocent exchange and smiled. When the meeting began, Shinichi's companions stood up one by one to speak. They were all top leaders of the Soka Gakkai, whom the members had seen only in the Seikyo Shimbun, the vice general director and the chiefs of the study department, women's division and youth division. It felt like a dream to the participants to be listening to their encouragement firsthand. Finally, it was time for guidance from President Shinichi Yamamoto. Here, as in Hawaii, he decided to field questions. The members' questions were colored by the heartache of living in a foreign land where they were unable to speak the language. Here, too, the words, "I want to go back to Japan," were heard. It was apparent that many of the members had been living from one day to the next under a cloud of anguish. Shinichi had to pour every ounce of his energy and passion into giving courage to those held captive by sadness and despair, so that they could regain the strength to live vibrantly. This required strenuous effort, like that needed to produce fire from damp wood. Cherishing each person, Shinichi spoke of the greatness of Buddhism, offering advice and direction with painstaking care, his words at times blazing with conviction. By the time the question and answer session drew to a close, the room was filled with cheerful smiles and glowing expressions. Shinichi took a moment to wipe the perspiration from his brow, then stressed powerfully, "All of you have come to San Francisco because you have a mission. Each day may be a great struggle for you right now as you grapple with a host of trying problems. But all these exist so that you can prove the great beneficial power of Buddhism. You are the great pioneers of Kosen Rufu in America. I want you to understand that America's future rests entirely on your shoulders. For that reason, I ask three things of you today. The first is that you acquire citizenship and become good American citizens. Accomplishing Kosen Rufu will ultimately hinge on the trust and respect those who promote it earn from those around them.
Though you live here, you cannot win society's trust by leading a rootless existence, feeling no love for America, and constantly thinking about returning to Japan. Acquiring citizenship means taking on certain obligations and responsibilities for this country, while also gaining certain rights. This is the first step towards laying down roots of trust in society. The second thing I ask is that each of you obtain a driver's license. Unlike Japan, America is vast. You need a car to go anywhere. Given that Kosen Rufu will develop to the extent you are mobile, a driver's license is indispensable as you begin your struggle to spread the Daishonin's teachings in earnest. Third, I would like you to master English. If you become proficient in English, you will gain more American friends and can communicate and exchange opinions with many people. Propagation begins from our interactions with others, and dialogues forms the basis of such interaction. The Daishonin's Buddhism exists not only for those of Japanese descent. If Kosen Rufu is to be achieved in America, discussion meetings and guidance eventually will have to be conducted in English. It will fall on those of you here to take the lead in this task. Therefore, at least for a start, I would like you to become proficient enough to be able to recount something like, say, a Japanese fairy tale in English, for instance, Kaguya Hime, the Shining Princess. Shinichi looked around the room. Some people nodded in agreement, while others looked doubtful. A few of the women exchanged glances with their neighbors. None could imagine the other behind a steering wheel or speaking English fluently. Sensing their thoughts, Shinichi continued, "You may think I'm asking a lot, but it will be up to you and no one else to accomplish Kosen Rufu in America. Some of you, particularly the women, may think that you couldn't possibly speak English fluently or drive a car. But I would like you to challenge yourselves first and try. Determine to yourselves, I can do it. I definitely will. I know you can do it. Many women drive in the United States. It is perfectly normal. It will be the same in Japan in another 10 years or so. In that respect, too, I would like you to be pioneers among Japanese women. Also, there is no reason why you cannot master English. Even 5-year-olds here can speak English, can't they? Japanese, with all its Chinese characters, is supposed to be far more difficult to learn. Yet, haven't you all mastered that language splendidly?" Laughter rang out in response to Shinichi's humorous observation, replacing the heavy load in the members' hearts with a burgeoning sense of hope. "Yes," they began to feel, "there isn't anything we can't do if we try." At each subsequent meeting on this first overseas trip, Shinichi was to set forth these 3 guidelines and eloquently stress their importance to the members in that area. They were eventually to become a solemn vow for the Japanese members living in America. A slide presentation on the Soka Gakkai's activities in Japan followed Shinichi's guidance. Finally, he announced the formation of the new districts. "Today, I would like to establish a district here in San Francisco to make a fresh start for America's future. 2 days ago, a district was formed in Hawaii, but this district will be the first on the American continent." The members burst into loud applause. Shinichi went on to introduce the leaders of the new district, which was to comprise 3 groups encompassing the San Francisco, Suisun, and Sacramento areas respectively. After introducing the leaders of San Francisco district, Shinichi Yamamoto then announced that a district would also be established in Nevada. "I would like to appoint George Oliver as the chief of Nevada district, and Yasuko Oliver as the Women's Division District Chief. Although there are only 2 or 3 other members in that region, all of whom were introduced to the practice by Mr. and Mrs. Oliver, I have nevertheless decided to form a district there." The Olivers stood up. Murmurs of surprise arose from the participants. As if to forestall their speculation, Shinichi continued, "You may be wondering why I've decided to establish a district in Nevada where there are so few members. It is a step I am taking to prepare for the future. The district lies on the forefront of our movement and has a direct connection with each individual. At the same time, it is endowed with all of the functions necessary to support our daily activities. You might say that all our struggles in the realm of faith have centered on the district, and that it is within the district that each of us has grown. If we liken the Soka Gakkai to an orchard, each district corresponds to a single fruit tree, while the fruit represents each one of you. Without the tree, there will be no fruit. Everything depends on the tree. Similarly, the real basis of the Soka Gakkai is each district that composes it. One could even say that the district itself is the Soka Gakkai. When a district is formed and becomes fully functional, Kosun Rufu in that area will progress by leaps and bounds. Nevada is a large state. It is a land rich with unlimited possibilities for the future. Therefore, though there are now scarcely any members besides the two district leaders, I have established this district with a view towards the future, 3, 5, or 10 years from now. While I am certain that Mr. and Mrs. Oliver have a formidable task ahead of them, President Toda, too, stood up alone to accomplish Kosun Rufu after his release from prison. As a result, the Soka Gakkai's membership grew to more than 1.5 million households in the space of only 15 years. I would like to ask Mr. and Mrs. Oliver to please stand up resolutely in the vast land of Nevada, holding aloft the banner of the law. Moreover, George Oliver will be the first person of non-Japanese descent to be appointed as a district chief in our organization. His appointment will attest to the fact that the Soka Gakkai is a religious organization for the entire world. I ask you to strive hard so that your efforts may become a model for the Kosun Rufu movement in America. Hi! Yes, George responded energetically. His voice resounded with a fresh and vibrant determination. Another seed of Kosun Rufu had been planted. Everybody present sensed that a new era had arrived. Even after the discussion meeting had ended, hardly anyone made a move to leave. Everyone was overjoyed. Refreshments of tea, cakes, and colorful Japanese rice rolls were served, and joyous conversations unfolded around the room. Some members sought guidance from the visiting leaders, while others could be seen exchanging addresses. Shinichi Yamamoto had just gone into the other room when Katsu Kiyohara, the Soka Gakkai Women's Division Chief, entered. Sensei, she began hesitantly, as if wondering how to broach a difficult subject. It seems that Yukiko Gilmore and some of the others have collected a dollar from each member because they want to treat us to dinner. Shinichi's face clouded when he heard Kiyohara's words. That won't do, he said. He sent for Yukiko Gilmore and proceeded to give her careful and detailed instructions on this point. I am touched and gratified by your thought. But surely everyone here is having a hard time making ends meet. You mustn't do anything that will put an additional burden on them, nor is there any need to do so. By announcing that you have decided to collect money to buy me dinner, you end up creating an atmosphere where everyone will feel they should comply even if they don't really want to. Therefore, though you may say it's everyone's wish, in effect, it will be half compulsory. This may actually cause some people to harbor mistrust towards the Soka Gakkai. Even though the original intent may have been sincere, it could quite easily throw the members' faith into confusion. Therefore, leaders must take great care never to irresponsibly collect money from members. In the Soka Gakkai, we are very strict about money matters, if anything, tending towards overcautiousness. Although it may seem like I'm being very harsh, I want you to take the money you have collected and respectfully return it to each person, carefully explaining to each the reason why. Mrs. Gilmore seemed perplexed by Shinichi's words at first, but soon she said apologetically, "I understand," and left the room. Shinichi was fully aware that her actions had been well-intentioned. Thus, the thought of her having to apologize and return the money to each member pained him. However, if she was to lead the organization as district chief, she had to learn the Soka Gakkai's strict attitude towards money matters. Otherwise, there was a possible danger that some major problem over money might erupt in the future. Shinichi's guidance had been based on his concern and compassion for his fellow members. A little while later, Shinichi looked in again on the main meeting room. Ailin was busily weaving her way among members, engaging in conversation and serving tea. She moved about as if she were in her own home, even going freely in and out of the Gilmore's bedroom. Shinichi saw this and stopped her. "Mrs. Lin, you may be Mrs. Gilmore's friend, but you really should refrain from going in and out of people's bedrooms when you visit their homes. Respecting each other's privacy is an important rule in American society. Buddhism teaches how we should conduct ourselves as human beings. Buddhism also manifests itself in society. To win people's trust, it is vital to pay attention to the smallest detail." The members who gathered would all one day become key figures of the Kosen Rufu movement in America. For that very reason, Shinichi felt compelled to give detailed advice on even the most seemingly innocent and casual actions. Starting from scratch, he engaged himself firsthand in the fostering of able individuals. Just then, Director Yukio Ishikawa came over and sat down beside Shinichi. "We may have created a district, but the way things look, I'm worried, aren't you? None of them has an iota of common sense, including the newly appointed leaders. They're just too naive. Can they really do it, I wonder? There's not a single capable person among them." Shinichi replied indignantly to the director's derisive tone. "I completely disagree. They are all capable people. They will begin to shine from here on. If they persevere with pure-hearted faith, their names will all go down in the annals of Kosen Rufu as pioneers. I'm looking to their future with high hopes." "Oh, really?" Ishikawa grunted and left the room. Certainly, there was no doubt that the members who had been appointed that day had little experience or training as leaders. Their status or position in society was also far from prestigious. However, they were all exerting themselves in faith, undergoing one painful struggle after another in America, a land that for many of them was strange and new. They, more than anyone, could empathize with other people's sorrow and pain. In that respect, they surely possessed a most suitable and respectable mission as leaders who would write the great human epic of Kosen Rufu. Shinichi couldn't help thinking of them as diamonds in the rough that would one day sparkle with dazzling brilliance. After breakfast the next day, Shinichi Yamamoto and the other leaders from Japan, with the Gilmores and Taylors as their guides, set off to visit the Muir Woods National Monument, a natural reserve noted for its giant coastal redwood trees. One of their aims was to ascertain whether redwood timber would be suitable as construction material for the grand reception hall, which the Soka Gakkai was planning to build for the head temple, Taiseikiji. As they headed away from the city, San Francisco Bay unfolded off to their right. Soon, the Golden Gate Bridge, with its magnificent red towers, came into view. As they approached, its soaring structure seemed to loom above them. The group decided to stop for a short break at a small park near the bridge. Stepping out of their cars, they saw on display a section of the suspension cable used in the bridge. A sign explained that the cable was 92.4 centimeter, that is 37 inches in diameter, and comprised a total of 27,572 separate strands of wire. Shinichi and the others stood in a circle around the display. "Though the cable itself is thick, each individual wire is quite thin. How amazing that it can hold up the bridge!" exclaimed Katsu Kiyohara. Indicating his agreement, Shinichi then addressed Yukiko Gilmore and Chiyoko Taylor, who had been appointed respectively as the San Francisco District Chief and Women's Division District Chief the day before. "It's true that the individual wires are not very thick, but when bunched together in great numbers, they display incredible strength. This resembles the unity of Itai Doshin, many in body, one in mind. In the Soka Gakkai too, though each person's strength may be small, when that strength is combined and the members firmly united, they can display unimaginable power. Unity is strength. From now on, you must play a central role in unifying the members' efforts to support the Kosan Rufu movement and the happiness of the people of San Francisco. Yes, the two women replied in unison. The immensity of this lofty mission with which they were entrusted filled them with a sobering sense of responsibility. Following their short break, the group climbed back into their cars, crossed the Golden Gate Bridge, and drove steadily up into the mountains. The steep and interminably winding road hugged the mountain's edge as it continued to climb before them. The group parked their cars in front of a densely wooded forest. They had arrived at the entrance of the Muir Woods National Monument. Immediately inside the National Reserve entrance was a cross-section of a giant coast redwood tree that was about 2 meters, 6.6 feet in diameter. The tree's growth rings were clearly discernible, forming a series of closely packed concentric circles. Display markers indicating 500 and 1,000 years were attached at intervals, tracking the course of the tree's growth. The members of Shinichi's group tapped on the giant cross-section, examining its hardness and closely inspecting the cracks formed in the wood due to drying. The group then lunched on rice balls in the shade of the trees. Just as their cheerful meal was drawing to a close, a park official came along and addressed them in heated tones. Paul stood up to offer a confident reply. Nagayasu Masaki informed Shinichi of the gist of their exchange. The official is asking us to move because eating and drinking are prohibited here. Mr. Taylor said, okay, we didn't know. We'll move right away. He then spoke about you, saying, by the way, do you know Mr. Shinichi Yamamoto, the president of the Soka Gakkai in Japan? That's him over there. He's a great Buddhist leader. You should consider yourself quite honored to be able to meet him. That's what he said. Everyone smiled wryly. That's our district advisor, proclaimed Chuhei Yamadaira. Trust him to be on the ball. He's more dependable than a Gakkai member. It's great. Everyone burst out laughing. After their meal, the group strolled through the park, following a trail that weaved among the giant trees. Even though it was daytime, the forest lay dark and hushed all around them. If the cross-section of tree near the entrance was any guide, most of the redwoods in the forest would have been far older than 1,000 years. That would mean they had been standing here since before the time of Nichiren Daishonin. Shinichi couldn't help thinking that these trees had been waiting patiently through all this vast space of time for the day when the sun of the mystic law would rise over the American continent. A breeze rustled through the giant redwoods. The lush green foliage seemed to tremble with joy at the arrival of the dawn of worldwide Kosan Rufu. On their way back from the Muir Woods National Monument, Shinichi and the members accompanying him that day stopped off at Telegraph Hill with its sweeping views of San Francisco Bay. The usual mist that descended upon San Francisco towards evening was nowhere in sight, and off in the distance the ocean shimmered in the light of the setting sun. They also had an unobstructed view of both the Golden Gate and the San Francisco-Oakland Bay bridges. Fanned by a gentle autumn breeze, the members soaked up the breathtaking panorama. Crowning the top of the hill was the Coit Memorial Tower. Resembling the nozzle of a fire hose, the structure was built by Lily Hitchcock Coit, a well-known philanthropist who had an abiding love for San Francisco. In the middle of the square, immediately below the tower, was a bronze statue of a man wearing a long cape and a cross around his neck. Whose statue is that, I wonder, said Shinichi. Nagayasu Masaki went to have a look at the inscription on the plaque at its base. It's Christopher Columbus. Columbus is known for discovering the Americas, he informed Shinichi. The statue had been erected by San Francisco citizens of Italian descent on October 12, 1957, in recognition of the fact that Christopher Columbus was a native of Genoa, Italy. Columbus first set foot upon the shores of the New World on 12th October 1492, landing on an island in the Bahamas, which he renamed San Salvador. This statue had been erected on the 465th anniversary of that occasion. Columbus had originally set out on this voyage in search of Japan, which had been described by Marco Polo in a record of his travels as the fabulous golden island of Zipangu, located 1500 miles to the east of the Asian continent. In reality, Japan at that time was far from the golden land of fabled treasures Marco Polo extolled it to be. Columbus, in his imagination, captivated by tales of Zipangu, left the Spanish port of Palos just before sunrise on August 3, 1492, with three ships, the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. Crossing the Atlantic via the Canary Islands off the coast of Africa, he sighted the island he was to name San Salvador on October 12th, his 71st day at sea. This island, which Columbus found, was neither Zipangu nor the east that had been his destination. It was part of what the Europeans would come to call the New World of the Americas. The discovery was to open a new epoch of great ocean voyages. More than four centuries had passed since Columbus set foot in the Americas. His quest had been for gold and land to colonize. But for the indigenous people of the Americas, his arrival marked only the start of an invasion of their lands. Shinichi's journey, in contrast, was one of peace, a quest to illuminate the world with the golden light of humanism. It marked the beginning of an age of great voyages for global Kosenrufu. After the group had posed together for a photo in front of the statue, Shinichi looked up at the bronze figure of Columbus and said, "Like Columbus, we have now taken our first step on American soil. But we are engaged in a far nobler undertaking, for we are striving to create here on earth a new world where indestructible happiness and eternal peace reign supreme. With the passing of time, in 20, 50 or 100 years from now, today will without a doubt be remembered as a day of profound significance in the history of our movement." Although everyone listened solemnly as Shinichi spoke, it would be many years before they could really grasp with their lives the full import of what he had said. Shinichi gazed steadily out over the sea towards the distant horizon, his form a dark silhouette against the crimson glow of sunset, the breeze ruffling his hair. He stood motionless for a long time, holding a conversation in his heart with his mentor, Josei Toda. "Sensei," he reported silently, "I have opened the door of Kosenrufu for the creation of a new world, just as you instructed." His face, bathed in the sun's streaming rays, shone the color of burnished gold. With that, we finish the second chapter, A New World. Thank you for reading with me.